Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty on a Wednesday night for early Thursday arrival. That's right. I don't even need to explain while we're doing this. If you're a listener of the show, you know what's up. But nothing wrong with getting it early, right? Here we go. We're going to be with you for the next hour or so. Got a fun interview planned with James Yang, who's going to be debuting at ONE Championship. Also, we're going to be discussing the latest mixed martial arts news, including the results from last night's Dana White Contender Series, when Dana White turned into Oprah Winfrey again. Everyone gets a car. Not only that, we have a title fight that's been booked, and that's recent, too. That's hot off the press, so we'll discuss that. A big-name fighter who has officially retired. And then another big-name fighter who's in an interesting hybrid match that we'll discuss. We just read up on that today as well. All that news, of course, available to you on MMAJunkie.com. Get the app. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Wednesday, September 15th, for Thursday, September 16th. So, where do you want to start, Goes? I mean, kind of a lot of things snuck up on us in the last 24 hours. I think I want to start with my man, Joe B. One Kenobi. Joseph Benavidez has retired from mixed martial arts. Is it a serious deal? What's going on? Well, here's what we know. He withdrew from the USADA pool testing. So, he's out of that. And his wife, Megan O'Leary, UFC analyst and host and reporter, she basically confirmed it via social media. She wrote a nice post about how they plan to enjoy their retirement. I wouldn't say this one caught me out of left field, Goes. I knew that he would probably consider it, but I felt like he would consider it over the next couple of fights. Not that he had been considering it, and this is it. I know he lost his last three fights, two to Davison Figueiredo and one to Askar Askarov, but I didn't feel like he got – how can I put this? I knew he wasn't taking punches as he once did, but I still didn't feel like he was getting so walloped that that's it. He needed to exit the sport at age 37, but he has. Congrats on a fabulous career. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he wasn't getting dominated. You know, the one thing you can always count on Joseph Benavidez is coming in shape and being able to perform. He rarely would get tired in fights. But you could tell that he's just slowed down a little bit. You know, I mean, that just happens to every fighter as they get older. It's really tough, though, because, like, if you look at the last three fights, those are pretty tough fighters. You know, I think a lot of people would look that way. So for Joseph, I'm sure he took his time in making this decision. I'm sure he spoke to his wife a lot about it. And I think it's a good decision. It's not that I don't – the issue here is I feel like, yeah, he could probably stick around for three more and perform and probably do fairly well. But do you want to do that? You know, do you need the money? Do you want to add injuries to your body? Risk brain trauma. If he can leave the sport now happy, then I would do it. I give him props for leaving at a good time then.
He was the coach for the current world champion, Brandon Moreno, on the season of The Ultimate Fighter where they had the flyweights come in, if you'll recall. And he had to have trained with them and known, I got something. Remember, it was him and Cejudo, and they were training a bunch of flyweights who were champions from all over the world. And had Figueiredo still been champion, I think I would have said, oh, okay, I get it. That makes sense. He just fought twice against the current champ, lost viciously, and then he lost to Askarov while yet again Figueiredo's champ. So we know the road to get to Figueiredo is almost impossible, but that's not the case. Everything I just said is true, except Brandon Moreno is the champ. So I thought maybe that changes, you know, for some of these fighters that have come up short against Figueiredo or whatever, or just felt like they didn't match up versus Figueiredo. So do you feel like that ever came into play? Like, do I got something for the champ? I got to believe anybody retires has to know, man, I can't take that cat down. You know, like, to top it off, I'm not getting Brandon Moreno right away, but the road to get to Brandon Moreno, and then I have to face off against someone who maybe I'm not feeling too good about, you know. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think some of that might have played into the decision. The last couple years, it seems like what makes Joseph happy are things that are outside of MMA, really. So I think maybe he could. There are some fighters that get to the stage in their careers and they're a little burnt out. And I think maybe he has a little bit of that. But at the same time, I think it was probably a good decision. I think it's the right time, and he's going to go down as a really tough cat, you know, that a lot of people had problems against, and he always showed up and put on great performances, and he had to face the best of the best. I think that's something that you can kind of put your head on the pillow and just say, hey man, I went out, but I went out fighting the greats.
Yeah. We always say, don't stick around too long. And he's not doing that. So we should celebrate the fact that the man came to a decision at age 37 after competing twice for two major belts. He did it against Dominic Cruz in the WEC, and he did it against Demetrius Johnson and Davison Figueiredo in the UFC. So that's that. I think it was a great career. And now Sam Aljam, a good buddy of the show, has got me thinking about using the word great too often. But I really do feel like he had a great career, because guess what? I know there's a lot of careers out there that were good, and this one's above that. So I'm not saying the greatest career. He had a great career. I stand by that. He battled at 135 pounds until they created 125 pounds, and he held his own in both weight classes, again, only losing to the great ones. So, well, with the exception of Askarov, who, to be fair, we don't know what kind of a career he may wind up having. But it does seem like this will be it, and we don't know why he retired. So for now, we'll just say that I think it's probably going to stand, because he didn't do it right after his loss either. It seems like he's taking the time to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is one that's going to stick. I really do.
It's not an emotional one for sure. It's just his decision, and that's that. You're right. I've seen him, you know, he loves movies. He loves different types of entertainment, like television and documentaries and things like that. And then, of course, he likes a little bit of the fashion stuff. So, yeah, let's see how he sticks around. Let's see if it involves MMA or it doesn't. I don't think he'll ever be too far away because, again, his wife is, you know, a huge part of the UFC broadcasting.
Yeah. I think he'll always have some sort of tie, but, he'll always have a little bit of a tie. I just don't see him coming back as like an analyst or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember him seeing, I remember seeing him, on the set of Fox. I think he did get one shot there. He never did go back. Maybe he didn't want to, or maybe he didn't make the cut. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think we'll see him as an – I believe – you know what? I take that back. I think he may have actually done analyst work for another promotion somewhere. It was like one of those where you're scanning through your social media. Mm-hmm. And I think he said, hey, thanks for having me. And I think he may have done that gig. So, who knows? That
sounds familiar, too.
Yeah. But like I said, this is hot off the press. Joseph Benavidez retired. You know, he also lost a brother about, less than a year ago. You know, that's sometimes you just lose your fire when it comes to living in general. And there it could just be a lot, you know, the family, the losses in his MMA career. Who knows? Who knows what? We haven't spoken to him. You know, who knows how COVID hit him? He had it once, and I remember him telling us it wasn't a picnic, but he got over it, just like most of these athletes do.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Let's stick within that division. Demetrius Johnson is going to be in a hybrid MMA and Muay Thai event. Well, no, not event. His fight. All right. They're competing at 1X on December 5th against opponent Muay Thai champion Rotang Jutmunyong in a special rules fight. It's going to be 4 3-minute rounds alternating between Muay Thai and MMA rules. So they're going to start with Muay Thai, go 3 minutes in round one, then switch to MMA for 3 minutes in round two, Muay Thai again for 3 minutes in round three, and then MMA in round four. So a total of 12 minutes possible. Usually the fights he's used to are 3 5-minute rounds. So this will be less rounds or less time total, but more rounds, unless, of course, he was fighting for a world title, then he'd go 5 5-minute rounds. Well, what are your thoughts on this? This is interesting.
Dude, you know what? I got to applaud him. How many times do fans ask for these types of things, right? And they don't always come to fruition. This is one time where this seems pretty cool. I like it. I think DJ is best when he has to push himself. And I think for a fight like this, he's got to really push himself. So I think this you'll get the best DJ here. And it's really interesting, man. It really makes you think. It's 3 minutes. You know, depending on who you're looking at and what situation, they basically either have to survive for 3 minutes or pour on their best offense for 3 minutes, right? So it's going to be really, really interesting. I think it says a lot, though, that they're starting off Muay Thai, don't you?
Well, the first thing I started thinking about was, because this guy's no joke, obviously he's one of the top Muay Thai practitioners in the world right now. So the first thing I wanted, I mean, I don't want to go down at his hands, meaning at his specialty. So for the first 3 minutes, I'm going to be defensive and I'm going to be looking at the clock so I can get out of it. And then guess what? In round two, if I'm DJ, I'm wrestling and going to my jiu-jitsu and testing him there, wearing him down so that if we do make it to round three, he's not as bad as and bold as he was in round one. And then I have round four to hopefully either even the score or possibly finish him. You know, I'll get the last say. Now, from his side, he's probably thinking, oof, I need to pour it on him in round one, damage him, if not take him out. And then in round two, I got to work on that takedown D, you know, footwork. Move around the cage. Make sure this guy doesn't get a hold of me, hold of one of my legs and takes me to the ground. And then in round three, put it back on him. So it'll be two different strategies, except I think DJ's better at where Rotang is weak. And I think that might be the difference.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that's the big statement that's being made here is I think ONE Championship's basically saying we have a better chance of this fight making it to round two if we start off with Muay Thai than we would if we were to start off with MMA, right? Mm-hmm. So right away, that should kind of tell you who the favorite may be in this fight in their eyes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure DJ will want to test himself, so he's not just going to run in rounds one and three. I'm sure he'll mix it up. I think he'll be more selective when he does. Mm-hmm. But see, the nice thing about these mixed martial artists is even though they don't become, like, we'll say full-on experts, with the exception of, hey, look, some of them get black belts in jiu-jitsu. So you got to say, hey, look, you know, this guy's a martial artist in terms of he came from wrestling, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, whatever. I don't know if DJ's ever become a black belt in any Muay Thai system or any kickboxing system. We'll see. But either way, he definitely is more – well, he's got to be more well-rounded than Rotang. I don't think Rotang's ever fought in mixed martial arts. I was looking at the article here, and I don't believe he's fought in any mixed martial arts at all.
Yeah. Man. I don't think he'll run either. I'm wondering, like, it's got to be difficult. We were talking the other day. I can't remember if it was on this show. We were talking about old Pride fighters that just kind of have that. We were talking about Houston Alexander, right? And how he landed that last blow, and he said it was instinct. You know, he's trained a certain way. When you were in Pride and you came to the UFC, you had to turn it off that you couldn't throw the soccer kicks, right, or the knees on the ground. But in this particular fight, you just can't do that for two rounds. Like, I wonder if at any point that muscle memory will kick in for DJ and he might accidentally shoot or something, you know, like, I don't know. That's got to be messing with your mind in that fight. With Rotang, it's basically going to same. I mean, I don't think he's going to try and go for a shot. So I think he's just going to have his normal game. But I like it. You know what? It's enough to get me to tune in.
Oh, I'm tuning in for sure.
Yeah.
Rotang was part of that one on one on TNT 1, one on TNT 2, one on TNT 3, and one on TNT 4 run that they had on TNT this past April. And remember, their Muay Thai guys will go with 4-ounce gloves out there. So they've kind of made it sexy and exciting, you know, as they introduce different fighters and different matches. I didn't see this one coming for sure. I thought Johnson would face Adriano Moraes again because I think Johnson had deserved something like that. But it's not going to happen, so we'll see if they build back up to that. But in the meantime, he still gets to test himself in another way. The card also includes his teammate, Bibiano Fernandez, who's the one Bantamweight champion. He's going to defend his belt against former UFC contender John Lineker. Also, Tan Lee, the one one championship featherweight champion, he takes on grappling standout Gary Tonin. So right away, we're waking up early on December 5th and watching this event. This sold me.
Yeah, no, I'm down. I like it.
Sticking with the flyweight division yet even more, it appears that Davis and Figueiredo will get a third crack at Brandon Moreno. Is you down? What are your thoughts? I know we're just consuming that here in the last hour or so, courtesy of Brett Okamoto on social media from ESPN. I'm trying to unpack it, man. I know Askar Askarov was saying, wait for me, I'll fight in December. And then along comes homeboy that just won, Alexander Pantoja, who beat Brandon Moreno twice and made a compelling case in his post-fight interview why they should fight again. So I thought there was some options there where we didn't need to see Figueiredo for the third time. Like, I'm not opposed to seeing Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. Brandon Moreno is 1-0-1 against them. So I'm okay with seeing a possible third, but I just don't need to see it right away.
Yeah, it's unfortunate right away seeing it again. I'm not a huge fan of that, but I do understand that if he wants to keep active, this is what he has to do. I kind of commend him because there's not a lot of people who would want to fight Davidson Figueiredo, let alone three times. It's a big risk, I think, but it's just not my cup of tea to see this quickly. But I understand the circumstances.
I'm just wondering if both guys were approached, both Askarov and Pantoja, because if they weren't and they're just giving us this fight, I don't know. It's confusing. If the UFC's job is to keep us on our toes and not be able to figure out their championship title structure, then they do an outstanding job. They're black belts in it with red stripes everywhere. But these guys are the NFL of mixed martial arts. Like, why isn't there something that points towards a road to the title that's unlike boxing? In fact, Dana White even said there's too much politics in boxing. Over here, the best fight the best. And again, Figueiredo is one of the best, but he just had his chance. He lost his title. He didn't have many title defenses in his reign. He had only defeated Alex Perez. So it's not like he had this long reign or there was something special where we needed to see Figueiredo yet again. Now, look, if Kamaru Usman were to lose to Colby Covington, then we'd all go, you know what? He's won four in a row, bro. He's only lost one before Covington, and he's 1-1 against Covington. Do we run the trilogy? We have to sit down as a committee and seriously consider that. That doesn't get dismissed over a text or a quick call or a Marco Polo. You need to sit down and think that one through. You know, he deserves that. I thought Jose Aldo, even though he got smoked in 13 seconds, deserved to get considered for a rematch against Conor McGregor. But McGregor wanted to go to even bigger things, and I think the UFC was just so in love with McGregor Mania that they said, nope, that ship, it's not that it sailed, it's just docked for now. This guy wants RDA, who wound up being Nate Diaz, if you'll recall. He wants to be a champ, and we're making tons of money. So there's reasons to do it, and you know, when they do it, and then there's other reasons to not do it, but I just don't agree with this one.
Yeah, I mean, consistency is something that you want to look out for. But the UFC is just known for doing these types of things, so we'll see. I mean, I don't think Brandon Moreno carries that many cards that he can demand things, so I think they must have heard this and just for some reason been on board with it.
You know, I got to do it. It's almost like you can't do an episode without bringing up Jake Paul, so let's just do it. Dana White did some media after Dana White Contender Series, which, by the way, yet again, another fun week. I'm not a fan of everyone getting a contract, but I have been a fan of those fights, and on a Tuesday night, it breaks it up. It's cool. Last weekend, we had no fights, so to know that the Tuesday before and the Tuesday after we did helped kind of ease the pain. But after the fights, he was asked, hey, what do you think of Jorge Masvidal versus Jake Paul or one of your stars going over to fight Jake Paul? And he goes, you know, Anderson Silva is not under contract. Have him call Anderson. Almost as if to say, I notice he's not calling Anderson. He doesn't have to mess with UFC contracts now. Call the guy that's your size, you know, and actually has some decent professional boxing skills, which, by the way, Masvidal has too. But he was being sarcastic when he said it. Hey, call this guy. And then, of course, Jake Paul fires back on today. Did you like that back and forth? Or
yeah.
Have you had your fill, or are you still kind of just a fan of this kid?
I'm still kind of a fan of his. But what I don't understand is, like, I get it. Anderson Silva's there. That makes sense to me. But I don't like pretending like this is a guy that's just kind of picking guys that are tailor-made. Like, Tyron Woodley should have beat him. That should have been a matchup that he lost. There were a lot of people in the boxing world and the MMA world that have covered these sports for a long time and said Tyron Woodley should win this fight, okay? I thought it was ballsy for him to take on Tyron Woodley because I think he could have found another fighter like Ben Askren, someone like that along those lines. He could have fought a WWE guy. You know, he could have fought a guy from MTV, who knows? But fighting Tyron Woodley I thought was a big chance. So I don't think you can kind of make it sound like he's just running away from people either. But I do like that every time Dana says something, this kid, Jake Paul, checks him, you know, and they can go back and forth. That's fine. But I just don't think you could take away too much from him either.
What do you think of the supposed matchup against Tommy Fury, the half-brother of Tyson Fury, who's obviously not 6'8 like Tyson Fury? He comes in more around Jake Paul size. You know, he's a professional boxer, 7-0, four wins by KO. So it's not like he's too much further advanced. 7-0, 3-0. But sounds like he's been doing it for longer than Jake Paul. What do you think of this one?
I think that fight can be kind of dangerous. I think boxing fans might be a little bit more into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he kind of caught MMA fans. Like, if you told me those two were going to fight, I probably would watch it. And I think a few MMA people, Jake Paul's just come into MMA and he's grabbed their attention. I think maybe he gets half of them to stick around, you know. But that would be pretty interesting for me as well. I think I would tune into that. I'd tune in way more if it was Anderson Silva or if it was Jorge Masvidal. But that fight interests me too, and they kind of got into it in the back in the last fight, so why not?
Jake Paul always has these crazy ideas that always come attached to, you know, if you do this, you got to get a tattoo. If you do that, I got to do with this, you know. And he's the one thing he did say, because it was a social media post on Twitter. He said, "Anderson's out, Jake. I want your star talent. You're in their prime strikers, so that I can exploit their lack of boxing ability." So this is Jake Paul talking to Dana White. "So let's do this. Me versus Jorge Masvidal and Amanda Serrano versus Amanda Nunes. If we win, you let any of your fighters fight me going forward. If we lose, I leave you and your exploitative business alone." So a chance to get a dig in there. You know, Dana is also a businessman. And if there was ever a time to let Jorge Masvidal have a one-off, it might be now, because he just fought for the title twice in the last 2 years. And he's let him do this stuff before. He gave him a belt, the BMF belt. It was between him and Nate Diaz. So maybe he could go out there and actually get this kid smashed while making money for his company. Now, maybe he doesn't want to do business with Showtime, because Showtime's where Jake Paul's at right now, or however they plan on doing it. But it might be interesting. It might even be appealing to Amanda Nunes. Who knows? But if he can do it while also making a little bit of money for his company, he might consider it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know that this is the craziest thing ever. Now, what I don't believe is that Dana White will say, "Oh, yeah, if you win, you get all this stuff." No. Send you the fighter. Let's do the fights, and if you go 2-0, then you and I need to have a steak dinner and discuss other possibilities. You know, maybe something general like that. But Nunes would be a tough out, man. She can throw hands against Amanda Serrano. She wouldn't just be easy. And then I think Jorge Masvidal is definitely a step up in terms of striking ability. No disrespect to Tyron Woodley, obviously, but I think Tyron Woodley knows, you know, like, Jorge Masvidal kind of came up more like a boxer, even though he wrestled, than Tyron Woodley, who definitely was straight wrestling, and then, you know, developing hands and feet.
I think if you're going to take that risk as a company and send one of your guys over, at that point, I put all my chips in and I make it Conor and try and make as much money as I can off of it. Because even if Conor goes over there and loses a boxing match, he's been losing anyway. Right? Like, what do you have to lose? I think a lot of people would watch it. I think Conor kind of hanging in there with Floyd, he didn't look too bad. I think he probably should beat Jake Paul. Mm-hmm. I would do that and just try and make more money at that point.
Man, I don't know about that one, because now you got Jake Paul, who can forever say be defeated former UFC champion. Maybe, I don't know. I just don't know. You know, I saw an interview with McGregor recently with TMZ. He says, "Hey, I squashed the beef. The beef is squashed with Machine Gun Kelly." But then he kept talking about his passion for fighting. "I'm not done. I'm going to put in the work. I'm coming back. The fight game has not seen the last of me." So I can tell that he's obsessed with coming back and trying to, make a run at the title. He's beaten Poirier once at 45. In the second fight, he won round one before Poirier stopped him. And in the third fight, I think in his mind, he just feels like, "Hey, look, we don't know what would have happened. I broke my leg." So in his mind, he probably thinks Poirier is beatable still. Charles Oliveira is someone that we're all basically just recently accepting that, wow, this guy's pretty damn good, because we've seen him lose before on quite a few occasions at two different weight classes. So, and then I guess I'm politely trying to imply that with Habib out of the way too, it's a whole different landscape for Conor McGregor. Those guys like Gaethje, Poirier, Oliveira, I think Conor feels like he can come back and still be a world champion. And that's why I don't think he would do it until that's – finished. I think MMA is where it's at for him.
I don't know. I think he still likes money at the end of the day. I think that's what drives him.
How many buys did Woodley and Paul and Jake Paul have? There was a rumor that it could go over a million, and then I thought I read that they only made it to 250,000. So how big was this event? Do we know?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Let me see if I can do a quick survey.
It felt really big, but could be wrong.
All right, here's something that I'm reading. It says 500,000. Two different outlets are putting out 500,000 was estimated between Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. McGregor definitely makes this at least in between a million or two.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll see. Catch all this on MMAJunkie.com. As always, all of these stories are covered in full length in terms of details, the details that we're wanting to know. Like, for example, well, how's that hybrid fight going to go? It's going to start off with Muay Thai, then MMA, then Muay Thai. That's the stuff that all of our reporters dig into, and the editors make sure it's right. So check out MMAJunkie.com and check out the fabulous app that we have that's free on all tablets and smartphones. Free, did I mention? It's free. It's got everything you want in terms of knowing the schedule, what's upcoming, what's taking place, and a little bit on the fighters, especially where they're ranked and who they may have coming up. So check out that app, and then check out also youtube.com/MMAJunkieRadio. I got to keep plugging that because there's so much stuff that's attached to our website that a lot of people don't know about. I get a lot of love when MMA Junkie on our Instagram page, if they post something and I get in there commenting early, I get a lot of responses. I've noticed that one on Instagram is instagram.com/MMAJunkie.com spelled out. So give us a follow there. All right. Let's talk to James Yangos. He's got a fight coming up at ONE Championship on September 24th. Heard a lot about this kid. It's a pro debut for him. Let's catch up with him. It's time. What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We're talking to ONE Championship fighter, James Yang, who's got a fight coming up against Roel Rosario here in a couple of weeks. Welcome, James. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, let's get to know you a little bit. This is the first time we've chatted, and I'm going to start off with what you and Goes were chatting about, Rick and Morty. Is that kind of like, are you a TV guy, or is that just your show? Tell us a little bit about what you do when you're not training or fighting.
When I'm not training and fighting, man, to be honest, I'm always thinking about it. I mean, I watch a lot of fight videos, to be honest, and different disciplines and martial arts. But, yeah, I love Rick and Morty, obviously. It's pretty funny. I just threw the sweater on because it's pretty cold right now out in Seattle. But, yeah, man, Rick and Morty is hilarious. I also love watching documentaries. I mean, every time I can learn something on watching TV, I mean, that's a plus for me. So,
yeah. Well, we read up a little bit about you, and we'll get to the fight in just a second. It's going to be your pro debut. As an amateur, you've looked outstanding. I was telling Ghost, what jumps out at me is a power in both hands, accuracy in both hands, very patient. It doesn't seem like you like to waste energy just kind of winging, you know what I mean? Like, you look very polished for somebody debuting.
Well, you know, if you want to go for a knockout, it's not about just swinging wild. You have to, it's like a marksman. You got to breathe, be calm, aim and fire. I mean, that's the way it is. So, I mean, I just got to keep improving my skill sets, you know. I mean, whatever I've done in the amateurs, I mean, this is a whole new jump up of competition. But, you know, I'm very grateful for this opportunity. And there's a reason why I'm getting this push here. So I want to take the full advantage of this opportunity and do the best that I can to maximize my potential.
Your boxing looks nice. Your kickboxing, I should say, in the sense of I saw some footage where you kicked somebody, they fell down, then you came in with some very nice hands. But I also know that you've spent some time Shaolin Temple studying Kung Fu. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. So when I was 17, after I graduated, I was going to take a little break before going back to going to college and living the typical, you know, American life, like college, job, and wife and all that stuff. But I decided to go to a Shaolin Martial Art Academy in northeast China. It kind of borders Korea, North Korea, and Russia. It's like in between that little piece of land. And yeah, I was out in the mountains for about 3 years. I ended up staying for 3 years. I got an opportunity to, I mean, all together, I stayed in China for 4 years, but I stayed 3 years in that academy. It was like rural China. And, you know, honestly, it shaped me and made me the man I am today, man. I was like subjected to the elements, real rough living conditions. Like, you know, you're using the bathroom and like you're squatting down. There's people like all around you squatting, looking at you while you're using, you know what I mean? Like it's you know, it's a rougher, it's just a different, it's a shock to American lifestyle, you know, for sure. But I wouldn't trade anything for the world for that, man. It was like one of the most beautiful experiences. And I really grew and developed as a human being in that time frame.
That's amazing. If you don't mind, we can spend a couple minutes on that. I'm just curious. Your plan wasn't to go for 4 years. It sounds like something where you went and then extended it because it was you were learning so much.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to train with the Shaolin martial arts, you know, Shaolin martial arts in general, Shaolin monks, because, I mean, that's where, like, at that time, that's why I believe are the home place of all martial arts came from. It all stemmed from Shaolin Kung Fu, you know, but... yeah, man, I met a lot of people that changed my perspective on how to live my life, and I just decided to chase after my dream. And I got an opportunity to perform with the demo team, which as a foreigner from America, I mean, no one really gets that opportunity. It's a very rare opportunity. So I got to travel around China, all around Asia, performing, touring. And I performed for the biggest performance I did was like for the Indian Cricket League. And it was like a packed out stadium full of like thousands and thousands of people. And I mean, that was just an amazing experience, you know, and I even performed for Bollywood award show. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful experience. But I mean, that traveling was really like, it wasn't glamorous or anything. It wasn't like we're flying nice planes. I mean, we're sitting on a bus for 18 hours standing up just to get to the dang airport in Beijing. That's how far we had to go. And I fell asleep, like standing with people like to the front of me, to the back of me, to the side of me. And I just had to like lay on some random people's shoulders and just chickens on the carts. And it was just like, you know. It was a special experience for sure, because it definitely humbled me and made me appreciative of being in America. And just to give you an example of what the school is like, it's like you're waking up by alarm at 5 a.m. in the morning. You got to go out for your morning runs, and you're basically training from 5 a.m. all the way till 8 at night. You get 2 hours of hot water at night, and it's like six showers of like little faucets, and it's all moldy and nasty in there. And everyone crams in there for those hours, you know, trying to get a shower in. And it's just like favor fighting for just luxury, simple luxuries, you know. In winter time, it's dark outside and it's cold and freezing. You got to do your laundry by hand and all that, and your hands are like freezing cold and you got to wring it out. But that's all mental training for me. I watch grown men like literally have breakdowns, like crack, you know. And like it was quite a sight to behold. But you know, I just had to stay. I mean, the reason why I was there, I mean, I knew what I signed up for. The reason why I was there was to train Kung Fu, Shaolin Kung Fu, that, you know, I couldn't learn that at the time anywhere else. So very appreciative of that whole journey there, that living out there. And then my fourth year, I moved to Beijing. I went to a professional sports school called Shir Shahai, and that's where Jet Li went to school, and he graduated out of there. And that was like the first time I got to train with like professional, a mixture of professional athletes. It's not just wushu athletes. It's like professional ping pong players, professional badminton, boxers, taekwondo athletes, gymnastics. It was all a big range of athletes. And I got to pick everyone's brain and just see how people train that out of, you know, at a high level.
That last academy almost sounds like the United States Olympic Training Center, something along the lines of that.
Yeah, well, it's like every city and every in China has like a professional sports team. And so that was just the Beijing sports team. That at the time, their wushu team was like one of the best in the country, and had like worldwide fame. So I got to train and work with those athletes, and it was a really big eye opening experience. Because although the Shaolin training was very important, it was like very good to get that under my belt. It's not sustainable for a long time periods of time. Because during all that training, I got injured and stuff, and I had to work through injuries, and just because I was doing acrobatics on concrete, you know, and like. It's just things will happen where you know, break an ankle or sprain an ankle, injure yourself. You gotta work around those injuries, and
yeah.
It wasn't like the best. Scientifically, it wasn't the best training, but mentally, it was like the best push I could have had. You know, because it made me a lot stronger and tougher. And yeah, just go back to that Shaolin Academy. Every month, we would have a test at the end of the month. So you either do a form that you've been working on, or you fight somebody, or you got to do some breaking, whatever you're working on. And I saw this guy try to like, he was training Ironhead, and he's trying to break a brick on his head, right? It's my brother from Canada. But the first time he did it, dude, it was rough, dude. He hit it and like gave himself a concussion, got wobbly. And then that whole month he came back and trained his ass off for it. And he comes back and he goes, bunk, he hits himself in the head. And then like a streak of blood starts coming down. And he just screams out and just boom, smashes through it. And I was like, man, that's some perseverance right there. Cause I mean, whatever you can say about that kind of training, it was pretty hardcore, man. And guys were really giving it all, they're all out there. So I can't speak enough about it. And the punishment too. And like, if you were to break a curfew or break a rule, like lights or electricity is cut out at 10 a.m. every night. And if you're like caught outside in school or anything, and you're like messing around or bring alcohol into the school, they're going to line you up in the morning and from the entire academy and then break a stick over your backside. Like, they're going to put you in like a push-up plank position and just beat you with it. And it's usually going to be your coach that has to do it. And it's like, you know, it's like emotional trauma. It's like physical drama, but only the strong survive. You know, it's a way to weed people out, I think. So I felt like it was almost like a jail yard, because everyone had to wear like orange jumpsuits, and there was like a basketball court on cobblestones out there. And any new student that would, you know, be coming into the school, all the students are there like, who's this new guy coming in here? Huh? Who is this? And no one would like talk to him or anything. And it's just a way to like, you know, see if you're going to make it or not, survive out here or not, you know, because it's like I said, tough survive, man. And that's just how it was.
I'm blown away right now. I probably have like 10 follow-up questions. This is so interesting. But what you've described sounds like it was very spiritual, mental, physically challenging, all for the betterment of yourself. You matured a lot. But at times, like if somebody were to walk in the room halfway through, they'd be like, oh, did he do time in prison? Be in the military? Like, they threw a lot at you as a young guy, but it really seems to have, you seem to have come out of there along the lines of like what a Navy SEAL or somebody or an elite Army Force Ranger, you know, would boast about the types of skills, physical and mental. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. It's like Hell Week, but for 3 years, you know. But I love that. You know, that's why I signed up for it. It's what I wanted. And, you know, I never complain about it ever, because it definitely shaped me and made me who I am today. And made me grateful also to just be from America. Like, I didn't, you know, at the time I was just a young kid. I didn't realize what it's like outside of here. You know, I felt like I was kind of a spoiled brat at that point, basically, because I just had no idea what the luxuries that we had here are so immense compared to how some people live. But with that being said, you know, these people I was living next to are like, you know, in Northeast China is kind of known as like the Dongbei people are kind of known as like the rough Northerners, you know, and I was living out in the fields, like the farming fields, and, you know, they have nothing, but they're like the happiest people I've ever met in my life, with like hearts of gold. And that was very special for me to see too, because, you know, you could have nothing amenity wise or like, you know, but it doesn't mean you're a bad person or a good person. And they were like the happiest people and the nicest people that I've ever been around.
James, so what was the do you remember the things that went into the decision to leave?
Yeah, man. I mean, at that time, home life wasn't the best. But now, you know, me, everything at home is good. But I mean, that was just something that I just wanted to do, man. As a martial artist, as a young kid, I've always wanted to do that. I was like, that was like kind of almost like a dream. A goal I had was to go train with Shaolin monks and be a Shaolin monk. And I got the opportunity, and, you know, the price of it wasn't that immense. It was only like $4,000 for the whole year. And compared to college, I mean, that's where I got my education, basically. And I went over there. I didn't even speak a lick of Mandarin. I speak Cantonese Chinese, which is like, if I had to compare it, like, so people understand, it's like Portuguese to Spanish. It's similar, but very different. And I just went over there and I couldn't talk to nobody. And I had to just figure it out and kind of teach myself Mandarin. And just, you know, that's another aspect of you know, traveling on your own and learning how to communicate with people that don't speak the same language as you. And then over time, I started, you know, teaching myself Mandarin and started figuring it out. So that was a very... it was just a very important time in my life, for sure.
So here you are in one championship, and George alluded to your amateur record. It's very impressive. Do you remember the moment where you felt like, okay, I'm going to let go of the amateur career, it's time to become a pro? Was there something that stood out that made you make that decision?
I mean, when I started pursuing just fighting in general, I went made my move to go to AMC Kickboxing Pancration. I mean, I wanted to just, I was training myself at the time, we're training with some guys, and it was like, I getting to a point where I was just kind of plateauing, and I never done any like groundwork. I did a lot of striking, and there's takedowns in that, like Sanda. But I always thought in my head, like, what happens if I hit the ground? You know, this is incomplete training. You know, I have weapons experience. I have fighting on the feet and takedowns and all this, but I need to learn more, you know. And so when I went there, you know, I just realized, you know, this is what I wanted to do. And at that time, I was working in aerospace factories. And this is why I came back from China. I had to just, you know, get money, make money. I was working in aerospace factories, and I was doing UPS package handling. And I was just and teaching Wushu on the side too. And I was just like, man, I'm spending like 4 hours in traffic every day, just wasting my day. It felt like compared to what I've been doing for the last 4 years. And I'm just like, am I gonna let those 4 years go to waste, or am I gonna act upon it and maximize it? You know, and that at my age and at my time in my life, I was like, I have to pursue this because I'll never have this opportunity again. And if I don't do it, you know, I'll live my life thinking, what if I tried it? What if? And I just didn't want to live my life like that. So. That is why I pursued what I did. And luckily, I went to AMC Kickboxing Pancration and had good chemistry with my teammates, and everyone there became like family. And I just kept growing and learning. And then I started competing for them in the amateur circuits and having success. And, you know, for my coach and their, you know, belief is that, like any profession, you have to be tested. And whether you become a lawyer or a doctor, there's like certain benchmark tests that you have to hit along the way to become certified or become that, get that profession. And so for the amateur fights, that's what that's like. Each fight is a test. And are you going to just win, you know, boringly and by points, or is it close? You know, are you going to go back and get better? All these things are going to be factors whether you're going to be able to become a pro or not, because, you know, that's just the goal wasn't just to become a professional fighter. It's also is to be the one of the best in the world. And, you know, I could have just started fighting in a casino, but I decided to gut it out the amateur career so that I can improve my skill set, improve my mind, figure out, you know, what's the best way to get better. And that's why I'm here now.
You get a lot of rounds in with Demetrius Johnson and Bibiano Fernandez?
Yeah, definitely. Every time they, you know, getting ready for fights, even out of fights, you know, DJ and I always training together. And when Bibi gets ready for fights, he comes down. We worked a lot together, extensively together, prepared for a lot of fights over like the last seven years now. And yeah, man, those guys are just nothing but inspirations to me. You know, like my big bros. And yeah, I just listen to what they say and take what their experience and learn from them.
Did I also hear that at some point you were a performer for the Cirque du Soleil shows?
Yeah, so I auditioned. So there's an audition for Ka, the show in MGM.
Yeah.
And, you know, thousands of people send videos to it. And of those videos, they selected 16 people, and then they did a live audition in Vegas. And of that 16, they only took two people out of there. And I got taken into the database as one of those people. And I got opportunity, as they said, perform it for Zumanity. They wanted me to do Zumanity, like the burlesque show. And I don't know. It was cool, but, you know, it's just not what I want to do at this time in my life. And I turned down a couple of shows, actually. But I definitely want to perform with them for sure in the future, maybe after my fight career, if all things, you know, if I'm still healthy and everything. But basically, they wanted me to get my fire of competition out of my system before I go make the jump full time for a cert, because that's a full time commitment. I won't be able to train and do what I, you know, do this anymore, because that's like two shows a night, 6 days a week. And it's like, it's nonstop, you know, and plus you have to do all your makeup and everything. And a lot of training goes into it, but definitely a goal still that I will go back and do it again in the future.
James, to be fair, you did squat in front of other men. I don't think the burlesque show should shock you at this point though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't horrible, but I mean, it's just, if my parents can't come watch that kind of show, you know.
I got you. All right. Interesting. Yeah, you know, our studio is right across from the Michael Jackson show, which is a Cirque show at the Mandalay Bay. And we've kind of, I think Goz has been to more of them, but I've been to like three or four. I really enjoy them. And what I like more is the physicality, the acrobatic stuff. I mean, the Michael Jackson one's a little bit different because dude's performing, and then the Beatles one is pretty cool as well. But I just really get a kick out of all the, like, the tumbling and all that stuff that I would never dare do, you know, even in a full helmet and protective gear. I can't bring myself to run, jump and trust that the rest of my big old body is going to make the flip so that I can land correctly. You know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible, man. You know, the thing that I learned about acrobatics is that you can't hesitate. Yeah. That's just like anything in life. If you hesitate, you're gonna injure yourself pretty badly. You just gotta go for it 100%. And if you do that, you probably have a lot better chance of landing on your feet than like half-assing or late. It's like that fear hurdle. You know, everyone has that. It's like a biological instinct to try to protect yourself. And you know, you just gotta learn how to overcome that fear.
I'm gonna ask you a silly question here, because that's I wonder things that are silly. If you're in the show and you're doing what you're doing, right? Physical stuff. And then the next part calls for you to run and kind of in midair jump and do like a somersault, right? If in midair you get a cramp in your calf, what do you do? Like, does the show allow you to kind of like stumble out and everyone else performs, or do you just have to gut it out?
You got to gut it out. If that happens in the mid show, I mean, you have to figure out, because you're performing from, you know, all these people that are watching you perform, they paid hard earned money to come see you, you know? And you, it's your obligation to give your best effort. Even if you get injured, whatever happens, you got to work through that pain. At least that's what I would do. You know, I don't know about every athlete or every performer, but for me, that's what I would do, because it's almost like an obligation to do that for them, you know. But it's different if you break your leg or something. I mean, then you got to figure out how to get out off the stage. But yeah, if it's just a little cramp, that ain't nothing to stop you. You just got to go through it.
That's crazy, man. I was making my bed earlier and I stubbed my toe, and for like 2 minutes, you know, I'm like, oh, fold it in half. And I just can't imagine, you know, in real life situations, you know, when you're performing, how people play it off. I'm sure there's a lot of stories, singers, entertainers of all kinds, Broadways, where just something, you know, is off physical, but they got to power through it. And we may never see it. You know, they're just smiling and doing what they need to do and carrying on. The show must go on, right?
Of course, the show always must go on. But you know, on the stubbing the toe thing, you know, if you ever stub your toe, it's almost like that's training right there. Of you know, mental is training right there. You know, you gotta take that pain and just absorb it and love it. You know, because that's what it is, man. It ain't that bad.
When people are watching, you'd be amazed how you can play it off, because you don't want to look dumb. You know, when you bump your knee, people are around or something, and you just go, oh, you know, and then you just kind of like tough it out. You have your tough it out face. But when you're alone, everyone turns into a big baby in a fetal position. Anyway, hey, listen, man, I want to wish you the best in your debut. 6-0 as an amateur, and you know, 7-0. Oh, okay, I apologize.
We got it wrong in topology, but you know, whatever.
7-0. All right, 7-0. It looks like you're a finisher. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah. It's going to be, you know, I'm looking forward to it. From fight number one, they have you listed. The fight card's called Revolution, folks, and of course, the fabulous One Championship app. BR Live app is there for you. This card is headlined on September 24th. It's a Friday here with a 8:30 a.m. Eastern start time. Christian Lee will be headlining that card. Maybe one day we'll be talking to you about your upcoming fight with Christian Lee. You know, that'd be, I think, pretty epic someday. I'm going to remember this. You know, you debuting, Christian Lee headlining. You guys are in the same weight class, and I'm sure you have a bullseye on them.
Yeah, I have bullseye on all the guys in the weight division, but it's a stacked weight division, so I'm just ready to get out there and perform. I appreciate it a lot, Gorgeous George, and you guys are – I love MMA Junkie, guys, so I'm a big fan of the show, so thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, and hopefully we can chat with you again in studio. We got to unpack that 4-year run you had in Northeast China. My mind was blown with all the questions that I had, but I respect what you did and what you went through, man. That's amazing, but yeah. Thanks again, James.
Thank you, guys. Absolutely. I would be happy to come in anytime. So thank you guys for having me, and we'll talk to you guys in the future.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye.
Man, that dude was interesting, wasn't he?
Man, he had a really cool attitude, and that whole... pushing himself like that, like washing your clothes in winter in cold ass water. Man, hell no. I've reached into like a bucket. I've had somebody say, hey, can you get me a beer, and put my hand in a bucket before at dad's house, and said, hell no, I'll stick to water. That water can get really cold. So you got to be really tough mentally. And I think this kid's in a good space right now.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, he's got his teammates that are, you know, they got this fight coming up in December. So going forward, you know, including this fight on September 24th, going forward, I think he's going to be able to build on that and maybe even squeeze in a second fight. It's always best when you can be in a camp with the top guys, you know, that are in your gym, like Bibiano Fernandez and Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, folks. So listen, that's our early edition of the Thursday show. We recorded it on Wednesday night, and hopefully this can get out to you guys a little bit sooner. Once we get back to live, it'll be a little different. We're obviously live on Mondays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. But for now, we have the ability to deliver this a little bit early. I know that's big for the podcast audience because you have so many choices to make out there, and we really, really appreciate the ones that have been with us for a long time or some of you newbies. Thanks for jumping on aboard with us. And follow us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. All right, enjoy your upcoming weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.